Welcome to the My Shamanic Life podcast, your exploration of spiritual ecology and the shamanic and spiritual practices that promote well-being for all beings. I'm your host, Debbie Phil, and I'm here to share insights and practices to get ready, get rooted, and get real about your health and the state of life on planet Earth. We'll explore the wisdom of deep ecology, look at some sad truths about the disappearing more than human world, feel into earth-based practices and teachings, and take action to help restore the wonder and magic of biodiversity to our world. I invite you to discover your passion and power, to unlock your inner wisdom, and to connect with our earth family as you map your own path to service. I am a white woman recording on the Adirondack hunting territory of the Mohawk Nation of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, ceded in 1797 without council approval. I acknowledge that my presence here is the ongoing legacy of settler colonialism, which includes the exclusion and erasure of many Indigenous peoples. I also acknowledge that this land I am on was once shared with species that have been eradicated by those settlers, including the Eastern Cougar, the Canadian Lynx, the Eastern Elk, the Passenger Pigeon, and the Gray Wolf. Settle in now, and wherever you are listening, notice how the earth is holding you. Become aware of what touches the ground, the floor, your chair, or whatever is supporting you. Sink a little deeper into that support and feel your energetic roots sink down into the earth. Feel how you are held, anchored in, nourished and nurtured. You are here. The time is now. Earth Day is coming, and I'm heading into a weekend full of live events on that theme. If you're in New York's Capital District or north towards the Adirondacks, there's some things to check out. Saturday, April 20th, I'll be at Common Roots Brewery in South Glens Falls, New York for Bikes, Birds, and Beers, a fundraiser for North Country Wild Care, our regional wildlife rehabilitator network. There'll be a silent auction of refurbished bikes, a basket raffle, and you can hang out with my friends' educational raptors. Then Sunday morning, I'm doing the service at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Glens Falls in Queensbury, New York. My talk is called Love Letter to the Earth. Whole service has an Earth Day theme. Then I'll be back at the UU building in the evening for the Mountain River Circle's full moon ritual. All of these are open to the public. I'll link the events from my website calendar in the show notes so you can get more information. So how did Earth Day get started anyway? The first Earth Day in April 1970 was organized by Senator Gaylord Nelson as a way to force environmental issues onto the national agenda. Nelson, who was at the time the junior senator from Wisconsin, was inspired by the student anti-war protests and wanted to turn that energy toward the deteriorating environment. Senator Nelson recruited Dennis Hayes, a young activist, to organize campus teach-ins to get the idea of protecting the environment out there. They chose April 22nd because it was a convenient weekday falling between spring break and final exams, hoping to maximize student participation. The concept took off, and by the time that first Earth Day rolled around, Nelson and Hayes had a staff of 85 promoting it. Groups that had been fighting individually against oil spills, factory pollution, power plants, raw sewage, toxic dumps, pesticides, freeways, the loss of wilderness, and the extinction of wildlife all came together around those shared values. The first Earth Day was also notable for having support from both Republicans and Democrats. The 1970 Earth Day led to the creation of the United States Environmental Protection Agency and passing the National Environmental Education Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the Clean Air Act, and the Clean Water Act, the first federal environmental protection laws. I'd planned to write this whole episode about how we need to step up as leaders and activists and bring even more ecological consciousness into our spiritual spaces. But I'm writing my paper for Ecology and a Planetary Crisis, the grad school class I'm taking this semester at the California Institute for Integral Studies, and I had to present my paper this week. Since I had to record it for class, I thought I would share the audio with you, since it's relevant to the Earth Day theme. My paper is called Small-Scale Rewilding, Benefits of and Challenges to Restoring Habitat on Less Than an Acre. I apologize in advance that you can't see the slides because I refer to the pictures I share a couple of times, but you don't miss anything important. My invitation to you is to listen and perhaps be inspired to start your own rewilding project. And if you've got something going already, share what you're doing on my socials. Okay, here we go. Hi, I'm Debbie Philp. I'm in my third semester of the Master's in Ecology, Spirituality, and Religion program. Since most of us don't have an estate to rewild, I looked at rewilding urban and suburban backyards and the benefits of those small-scale projects on the humans who undertake them and the ecosystems they impact. To me, a great failing of human development has been the exclusion of nature from so many of our spaces. In addition to the tremendous loss of biodiversity, it's diminished us mentally, emotionally, physically, and perhaps most importantly, spiritually. While, of course, wide swaths of land return to a more wild state are needed, that's inaccessible to most of us. The gift of interconnection should be available to all of us, even in urban and suburban settings. By making some changes to the typical American backyard, we can rewild the spaces around us, increase biodiversity, and rewild the human spirit, enhancing civilization. I'm going to talk about the way I'm defining rewilding, the benefits of rewilding our backyards, including the mental and emotional benefits, the spiritual benefits, and the benefits to the ecosystem. I'll also go over some of the challenges that those attempting urban and suburban rewilding projects can face. And finally, I'll touch on how knowing the benefits and challenges can influence the way we design backyard landscapes. Although I live in rural forest, I have under an acre and started my own rewilding project on land that was nothing but grass and gravel. The pictures on this and the rest of the slides are some of the wildlife who've returned since I started my habitat restoration work, like Mama Red Squirrel here. When I first heard the term rewilding, it wasn't in an ecological concept text. It was the title of a workshop being offered at a spiritual center where I was taking a different one. When I crossed paths with the rewilding people, they were in the woods, running around barefoot, howling like wolves, and probably getting ticks. While I was suspicious of the methods, I was curious about the concept of rewilding the spirit. My spiritual life since then has been an exploration of how humans might tap into some inner wildness and get a sense of interconnection with the rest of nature. So while my paper is focused on the benefits and challenges of rewilding an average backyard, I think it's important because for me, learning to coexist and actively providing space for more than human species to live well has been my process of spiritual rewilding. No screaming in the woods required. I believe we thrive when we all thrive. And this is reciprocity with the earth. That being said, I should define rewilding as I mean it for the rest of this presentation. Rewilding is the creation or restoration of wildlife habitats and ecosystem services on land that has been previously altered by humans to remove those things. I'm focusing on small-scale rewilding projects in private, urban, and suburban backyards, less than an acre. And while I didn't consider them for this paper, I want to note that balconies and rooftop gardens are also places that can be rewilded with many of the same benefits. National Wildlife Federation's backyard habitat certification requirements are good guidelines for what it means to do small-scale rewilding. Making sure the yard provides food, water, cover, and places to raise young, freedom from toxins, and gardening practices like composting that improve soil health. These projects usually include native plants, supplemental feeders, water features, bird boxes, and other things that restore or replicate the habitat that existed before the land was developed. I'll touch on this more later when I talk about ecosystem benefits, but I want to point out that the message most of us have received about wildlife conservation is that it takes place in some far-off land and protects exotic species that we'll never encounter without going on safari or something. Meanwhile, species that might be found in our backyards are disappearing because they aren't exciting enough to get attention. For example, amphibians like this little American toad, who does a great job of eating the bugs in my vegetable garden, are declining at an overall rate of about 4% a year. The US Geological Survey reports that toads, frogs, and salamanders will be gone from half of the places they're found today in 20 years. Providing even small areas of habitat that will support them and not spraying pesticides can really help. I believe there's great potential to enhance the well-being of humans and wildlife alike, and maybe save some of them through small-scale rewilding. I should probably also define wildlife for this context. I've distilled wildlife to mean the animals and insects that live wild in an area without having been introduced by humans. So while chickens are great, they aren't wildlife. Neither are cats, and outdoor and feral cats are antithetical to rewilding, but I won't go off on that tangent here. All right, let's talk about how rewilding our backyards helps us humans. There's plenty of documented evidence that time in nature improves our mental health. Stress is reduced, feelings of peace and calm increase. Well-being is also enhanced by gardening. So, wouldn't making a garden feel more like nature be even better? It turns out that yes, the beneficial mental effects of gardening increase when there is more biodiversity present. The act of creating habitat and then being in it, watching the wildlife that's now present, invites us to slow down. Even bringing on a meditative state that reduces mental strain and quiets worrying thoughts. You just stop and stare and forget the other stuff for a while. Rewilding is also a confidence booster. I remember the first time a hummingbird ate from a plant I chose, hoping they would like it. It's so gratifying, and studies show that rewilders who have small successes like that are more likely to experiment with bigger projects and continue developing their stewardship. Of course, mental well-being is related to spiritual well-being. Wildlife watching doesn't just reduce stress, it invokes feelings of wonder, awe, and just the magic of life. You might even have moments of sensing the larger reality and realizing you are part of that. You can really tune in. In one study of gardeners who did rewilding, respondents could describe all the different plants and wildlife in their garden, the way wildlife move through the space, and all the seasonal changes that happen. Imagine how intimately connected to the land they must feel, knowing all that. It creates attachment to the land that I believe is difficult to attain in our modern society, that is generally pretty mobile. Add in the fact that you created the space for those experiences, like keeping a water dish full or hanging a nest box for owls. And you are physically engaged in the ecosystem, not just looking at something over there. An interconnection then becomes an embodied experience. Interconnection is another one of those things that has two meanings here. I was just speaking about the human sense of feeling part of nature, part of the ecosystem. But wildlife habitat also needs interconnection. Not only does a rewilded backyard create a pocket of biodiversity, but it becomes part of a corridor between larger habitats, especially if you can get some of your neighbors to do the same. And it matters. Imagine how hard it would be for a bee to fly a mile without someplace to rest and eat. And youngsters can't travel that far either, like this fledgling blue jay, who needs to take a break often between practice flights. By creating interconnection between larger habitats, rewilded backyards contribute to broader conservation efforts. There are other benefits to the ecosystem too. When we have drought or just temperature extremes, like we've been seeing more often in our climate-changed world, rural agriculture and forested landscapes may provide less resources to wildlife than a suburban backyard. For example, we've directed water to homes and out of wetlands, so those backyards can provide water as it dries up elsewhere. Agricultural land surprisingly supports less biodiversity than urban areas because it's large fields of only one habitat type are of only one habitat type, sorry, while backyards offer variety. Cities and suburbs have become desirable stopovers for migrating wildlife too, because food sources are condensed into small areas, like feeders and native shrubs, meaning they don't have to expend as much energy looking for it. And there are fewer predators, so they can rest safely. Rewilded backyards also support pollinators, and adding native plants can reduce the impact of ornamental plant species, which take up space on the land without providing any benefit to the ecosystem, and sometimes become invasive, especially without competition from natives. While we give them other names like societies, neighborhoods, and communities, we can't deny the existence of human-centric ecosystems too. What's different about our ecosystems, though, is the idea of property boundaries. Fortunately, the more than human animals don't recognize those boundaries, which means increases in biodiversity in one rewilded yard spread out. So neighbors get the benefits like stress reduction without having to do much. Small-scale rewilding projects can strengthen the human relationships within the ecosystem too. Neighbors stop to admire the butterflies that found their favorite native plants. Friends and family share memorable wildlife watching experiences. Rewilding can also make areas more resilient in the face of climate change, which benefits everyone. And as the idea spreads, a whole society can change how it values the environment. There are challenges to even backyard rewilding projects, but they can be overcome. The rewilder may have to deal with complaints from neighbors because their yard isn't tidy by prevailing norms, and sometimes homeowner associations prohibit deviation from their standards. While it's expanding, the concept of rewilding and ecosystem stewardship are not broadly taught. Inviting habitat into human spaces increases the possibility of conflict, which is still mostly addressed by eradication rather than avoidance. There needs to be a huge shift in what landscape plant farmers grow before enough native plants are available to establish habitat in the majority of American backyards. There also needs to be a shift in the kinds of supplemental products that are sold, such as feeders, birdhouses, and bug hotels, to make them more useful for wildlife rather than just pleasing for us humans to look at. And I'd like to note that things like squirrel-proof bird feeders are insensitive to the needs of the broader ecosystem and also a waste of money because squirrels are smarter than us. My long-term goal is for my yard to provide enough food for a large variety of species so that the feeders become unnecessary. I'm not going to go into all of them now, but the benefits derived from rewilding should be thought about when backyard landscapes are designed, including the spiritual benefits. We also need to think about the benefits the wildlife get and make sure we aren't canceling those out in other ways. For example, garden designers should consider that the magical encounters they're having may be scary for the more than human animal and make sure to include escape routes and hiding places in the garden plants. My aim here was to make a case for rewilding on a small scale in urban and suburban backyards by sharing the mental and spiritual benefits for humans and the importance of rewilded yards to the ecosystem and broader conservation efforts. My volunteer work as a wildlife rehabilitator and environmental educator has inspired my own backyard rewilding project, and getting to know the more than human world in an intimate way has greatly influenced my journey of spiritual rewilding. I hope you found some inspiration too. Thank you for joining me for this episode of My Shamanic Life. Check the show notes for the links I mentioned this week. And remember to like and subscribe to get weekly episodes in your feed with more practices, teachings, and actions so you can get ready, get rooted, and get real about life on this planet. May you find wonder and magic in the beings around you this week, and practice walking gently on our earth each and every day.